Well, good morning. Hello. Welcome to the final convention installment of Denton's Perspective, our daily morning briefing on the presidential nominating conventions of both Republican and Democratic parties here in the United States. We joined you last week from Cleveland, and we join you today from Philadelphia. We have four terrific speakers today that I'm happy to introduce, four of my great colleagues from Denton's. I'm Scotty Greenwood with the Denton's Public Policy Practice in Washington, D.C., and today we are pleased to be joined by former Governor Howard Dean, former White House Political Director Ron Kaufman, former U.S. Ambassador to Canada Gordon Giffen, and former National Security Advisor to Senator Elizabeth Dole Chris Fetzer. So the program series is on the record. A recording of the call will be available midday on our website, www.dentons.com, and you can always follow us at Denton's. So let's begin. I'm going to pose a question to each of you gentlemen, if that's okay, and we'll start our discussion that way. I want to start with Governor Dean. The convention floor erupted last night with cheers of no more war and no more drone war during the address by former CIA Director Leanne Panetta. You ran, Governor, in your race for president as an anti-war candidate to much popularity and integrity by the people who are in the anti-war movement. Is the anti-war sentiment in a general election vulnerability for Hillary Clinton, who is in many ways more of a hawk than Donald Trump, who continues to support a more America-first isolationist foreign policy? What do you think?
I think people want somebody who's going to stand up to Vladimir Putin. And, you know, as I've said before, Paul Manafort took a great deal of money, most likely seven figures, for engineering the election of Viktor Yanukovych, who was Putin's proxy in Ukraine, who was eventually thrown out by a revolution and is now in exile in Russia. This is a serious problem. And I don't think the American people, I know what the polls show, and that is that most of the American people do not trust Vladimir Putin. The country has changed greatly under him and not for the better, and the world has changed under him and not for the better. He currently occupies portions of United States-friendly nations. So I think this is a really serious matter, and I think it's going to get debated a lot more. Every time, they can bring up all the emails in the State Department and Benghazi all you want, which is basically a political witch hunt. This is much different. This is taking money from a foreign power, most likely laundered through Yanukovych, and in fact, because Putin was putting up the money for that. So I think this is a very, very serious issue, and I do think people want somebody, and Hillary is a known quantity in terms of standing up to people and making deadlines that will not be crossed.
Thank you, Governor. Let's stick on the Russian theme for a second, and I want to direct a question to you, Ron Kaufman. Democrats on Wednesday accused Donald Trump of treason after he said in a press conference, as Governor mentioned, that Russians should hack Hillary's emails to find missing ones from her time as Secretary of State. Trump has since said he was joking. So what was it? Was it a joke or was it evidence of treason?
It was his response to a most ridiculous thing I've heard in the convention in a long time, that somehow the Russians hacked the CIA, the DNC files to help Trump win the election. Totally ridiculous, and everyone knows that, and that's what he was trying to say, accurately or inaccurately. But if I could step back a little bit, and first of all, I'd like to say to the lots of people who have been listening to this thing for 2 weeks now how I appreciate, and know Denton's appreciate, the nice comments we've gotten back, and we hope you've all enjoyed it as much as we have been part of it all. I found it interesting, this convention we watched the first few days of, when they booed the opening prayer, they booed former Speaker Pelosi, they booed Elijah Cummings, they almost booed Secretary Panetta off the stage last night, same with the general, even during President Clinton, President Obama's very eloquent speech, I may add. There were boos in the audience then. This is the most negative convention internally that I've ever watched in my long, way too long career. We had some boos in the beginning in Cleveland, but they were booing people who weren't supporting the nominee, not booing people who were supporting the nominee. So it's going to be really interesting, and I think we'll see what happens next Monday or Tuesday when all the polls in this country reflect on kind of bounce this convention gets from these last 4 days.
Thanks, Ron. You know, it's funny, your analysis of the booing. I wonder, Gordon Giffen may have a different view since he was actually in the room. I know that when Howard Dean was introduced on stage, the place went crazy with cheers. But so I'll turn to Gordon, but I'm going to pose the same question to Gordon and to Chris Fetzer, which is this. Ron, you mentioned President Obama's speech. You know, last night he vigorously defended his time in office, including, for example, the raid that killed Osama bin Laden and the withdrawal of troops from Middle East battlefields. It's clear that the president views this as a legacy issue. So the question for you first, Gordon, and then Chris, you can chime in, is how does Secretary Clinton negotiate that legacy issue with the understanding that nearly 60% of Americans are not in favor of the way the president handles foreign policy and national security? What are your thoughts, Ambassador?
Thanks, Scotty. First, to my dear friend, Ron, I'm not sure how many Democratic conventions he's been to, but I've been to 9, and I don't find the activity on the floor to be materially different than any other Democratic convention I've been to, and we've won several national elections. Secondly, I think any booing during President Obama's speech was booing references to the Republican nominee. So I'm not in the least bit concerned, and I think you're going to see an enormous coming together tonight when Hillary Clinton takes the stage. To Scotty's question, Scotty, you can't get 100% of the people to agree on anything. It's sometimes hard to get, you know, 25% of the people to agree. But I think in broad terms, Hillary Clinton will pursue in many ways a legacy of the president. In many respects, that's a domestic legacy in terms of healthcare, education, infrastructure, that sort of thing. I think on the foreign policy side, I think it's well known that Hillary Clinton and the president and some of the president's advisors had differences of views over the 4 years that Secretary Clinton served in the cabinet, and your job is to provide private, candid advice. But once the president makes a decision, you're a high-grade staff person, so you salute and you go forward. So I think there's some level of confidence on foreign policy that she has her own ideas and would pursue an agenda that might be somewhat different than the president's. But certainly her guiding principles would be similar to his in that she is a globalist. She believes that the United States ought to be engaged in the world, be a force for good around the world, as opposed to build walls and revert back to the kind of policies that were advocated in the 19th century by the Know Nothing Party that Donald Trump seems to have taken the mantle from.
Thanks, Gordon. Chris, do you want to weigh in on the national security questions? And maybe
yeah,
also,
sure.
While you're at it, Chris, preview tonight for us.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Scotty. Yeah, further to Ambassador Giffen's point, which I tend to agree with, I think it's widely accepted that Secretary Clinton is considered to be more hawkish with respect to defense and foreign policy than the president. And I think we saw surrogates, including the president himself, begin to frame that narrative yesterday. I think it's no coincidence, of course, that several speakers underscored Secretary Clinton's strong advocacy in support of the bin Laden raid when others were fence-sitting or unsure. And I think that we began to see a framing of the Clinton campaign's narrative that we're going to see hammered time and again until November. And we heard this really from Panetta, from Biden, and from the president himself. Panetta made the point that we cannot afford unstable leadership in an unstable world. We had Biden take perhaps the strongest punch yet of any surrogate in stating that no major party nominee in the history of this nation has ever known less or has been less prepared to deal with our national security. Finally, we had the president, which I believe actually even surprised some of his strongest supporters, group in homegrown demagogues with fascists, communists, and jihadists. So make no mistake about it, that is the Clinton campaign narrative going forward. Not just that this man is incompetent or uninformed, that he's reckless, and that he is a danger to U.S. national security. And I believe that we're going to see more of that theme tonight when General John Allen takes the stage. He's a retired four-star Marine general, former head of U.S. forces in Afghanistan, and the former presidential envoy to the U.S. International Coalition, Counter-Islamic State Coalition. So it's very clear, and I believe that Mr. Trump has played into this narrative with his recent comments, not just inviting the Russian hackers, but with respect to his potential support of our NATO allies under Article 5 if and when the need were to arise. So it's very clear to me that Secretary Clinton is going to position herself as stronger on these issues, even despite, as Ambassador Giffen pointed out, not all in the party will welcome it.
Thanks, Chris. You know, your comments are interesting. You're a Republican, and I think you're pretty tough on Donald Trump. And I think it's illustrative not only of the diversity of views in our firm among Republicans and Democrats, but also the divisions within the Republican Party. So we're going to go back up to the top of the batting order, but I know Ron Kaufman's probably anxious to get in. But before you do, Ron, I'm going to go back to the top with Governor Dean for a moment. Chris, you talked about surrogates. Gordon, you referred to the vice president as a high-grade staffer. So I want to talk about the VP role and the role of surrogates and ask a question of you, Governor Dean. Well, one sidebar question is you were the front runner for Democratic president for a period of time back in the day, and I wonder if you ever daydreamed about who your running mate might be. But also, running mates usually assume the role of an attack dog, and it allows the top of the ticket generally to remain above the fray. But last night, Tim Kaine was less of an attack dog and more of a cuddly dog in some ways, and he also is clearly doing outreach to Hispanics and Latinos. So with Trump as eager to insult people as he is, does this mean that Hillary is going to have to assume the role of attack dog, or what do you make of these roles, Governor Dean?
I actually think there'll be another attack dog or several. I agree. You can't change somebody's personality. Tim Kaine is an incredibly nice guy. And he's just not going to be a not nice guy when he gets on the podium. It's just, you can't do that. He would be out of place. I mean, I think he'll say some tough things, but because of his manner, he won't be seen as an attack dog. Hillary can't be the attack dog. She has to be the president of the United States, and the president of the United States has to be well respected. So I think you'll see a lot of surrogates, high profile surrogates. I wouldn't be surprised if Joe Biden was one of them. Is a pretty impressive guy, having, you know, served 8 years as the vice president. I actually think President Obama is not going to be able to hold his desire to do that, although I think he'll be dignified. So I think you're just going to you're going to see that, but that won't be the attack dog. And the answer to your question is yes, I made a wonderfully big mistake of actually interviewing a potential vice presidential nominee before a single vote had been cast, which I don't recommend for future contenders. We interviewed Bob Graham, and the reason I interviewed Bob Graham is because I felt my security credentials were very thin. And Bob had been on the Intelligence Committee on numerous sitting veteran foreign senator, in addition to a governor who I knew well when we served, and I liked him a lot. And we were thinking about running as a team, and decided not to because we were afraid the convention might be brokered and we might have to make some compromises and choose somebody else. And I wasn't going to pick somebody and then throw them over at the end if I needed to make that change.
That's a fascinating bit of insight that I don't think I knew about. And I was involved in that campaign of yours.
Yes, you were, but that was not, we didn't share that one with Trippy either.
Thanks, Governor. Ron, you're on deck, and let's stick with the governor mentioned Vice President Biden, actually. You know, Biden was actually pushed out of the prime time last night because the speaker slate included Tim Kaine and Barack Obama. It was a large slate of some Democratic stars. That's a contrast, as you know, Ron, because you were there in Cleveland, which was less political stars and more, TV actors from the 80s, soap opera stars. But each convention you know, did try to project unity, it seems that it's a couple different kinds of unity. The establishment unifying around Hillary Clinton, while it's maybe grassroots and disaffected, you know, or TV reality stars rallying around Trump. Which kind of unity is better, and what do you make of all that?
First, before I get into that, because it's a great question, Scotty, I want to thank you for, if the Trump campaign is listening to this today, the new nickname for Kane, Vice President Cuddles, is going to be making his appearance someplace, I guarantee you. But anyway, it's a great question. If I could, since this is the last day, I want to step back a little bit and say, what do these two different, completely different conventions portray, and how does it fit into the narrative of who's going to be next president? Because they were incredibly different. This campaign, if you like the establishment, if you like the status quo, if you want four more years, like the last 8 years, then I think this was stagecraft perfectly. Every leading Democrat establishment figure in the country was on stage, even though some were booed by the 45% of the Bernie Sanders delegates. But they were there, and that's the message. And I think if you believe that's the winning message, then it was a great convention. On the other hand, the Republican campaign reflected where Donald Trump believes that this is a campaign cycle that is anti-establishment and 100% about change. And if you add the Donald Trump numbers and the Bernie Sanders numbers during the cycle, it proves this point. So they wanted a campaign, a convention that wasn't the normal campaign, that wasn't establishment, almost anti-establishment. And I think they accomplished their goal. And I think they also accomplished during the Republican convention and the Democratic convention a problem for both these candidates now, where they have very, very high negatives. And both of them need to lower their negative if they're going to be winning in November and then governing afterwards. So I think both campaigns, both conventions got out of these 2 weeks pretty much what they wanted. And it goes back to something I said earlier in this week and maybe even last week once, that the dynamic of this whole election is about two things. The fact that Americans in huge numbers, like most people in the world, want change. People are worried, scared, afraid of the future, and they want change. The question is, how much risk are they willing to take to get that change? And Donald
Trump represents risk. So, Ron, you have made that point a few times. You have become a really eloquent and wonderful surrogate for Donald Trump, which is interesting because I know you pretty well, and I know he wasn't your first choice or maybe even your second, third, fourth.
He was the 17th choice, Scotty.
17th choice. That's right, Governor. So, good job on delivering the talking points. Ron, you get a gold star for that. You talked about what Donald Trump believes. And so just before we turn it over to Gordon and Chris, I just want to push back a little bit and ask you, he strikes me as a guy that doesn't have a core set of political beliefs. And I wonder if you think he actually thought he would win this or if he was running for other reasons. I mean, I feel like he might be as surprised as anybody that he's in the position he's in. What do you think?
First, Scotty, with all due respect, they're not Donald Trump talking points. They're talking points for Americans across this country who voted, particularly in the Republican Party, in record numbers. And more vote for him than ever before in history, 100 million more people watched our debates than their debates. Those people are saying one thing, we want change. We don't know which of these devils, the devil we know, the devil we don't know, is the best to lead our country, but they're willing to take a chance on the devil they don't know, Donald Trump. I have no idea if Donald Trump thought he'd win or not. He's a very complicated man, as we all know. He's a very smart man, as he's proven in many respects. I'm not sure, Scotty, but I don't think a man of the personality of Donald Trump ever gets into a race that he thinks he's going to lose.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Let's transition to Ambassador Giffen. Gordon, I know you spent some time this week with your former boss, President Bill Clinton. I guess ambassadors only have one person outranking them, and that's the president for whom you're their personal representative. And I know you spent some time with who you hope will be the next President Clinton. If you could talk to us about that dynamic, because it's got to be surreal to think about two people whom you know very well and have for years and have had such big positions. You were ambassador while Hillary, well, I guess before Hillary became Secretary of State, but how has it been this week? What's it like with Bill and Hillary, and what kind of thoughts do you have about tonight as she accepts the nomination, or as she gives her final speech at the convention?
Thanks, Scotty. Well, first, to my dear friend Ron, I got to make the observation that the reason that he didn't hear any disagreements at the Republican convention is because all of the moderate Republicans stayed home. They didn't even bother to go. They weren't welcome. I think of the majority in the Senate, about three Republican senators went. So that's why there was very little disagreement there. We have this inconvenience in Philadelphia called democracy, and we invited everybody to come, and they came. I think, Scotty, to your question, it's an interesting dynamic that it's only a subjective view from one person's observation. But I think the first President Clinton has moved into his role as a support player for his wife, and who we expect will be the second President Clinton. And I think he's quite comfortable with it. I've seen him in several settings this week where he is taking on the role of advisor in many respects as opposed to principal. And he, you were at the same event I was yesterday afternoon where alumni of the first Clinton administration were in attendance, and he sort of admonished all of us to, you know, prepare to be advisors to her, and not just see ourselves as, former Bill Clinton, supporters. So I think he's quite comfortable with that. And I have no doubt that she's quite comfortable with, having the decision-making role. It's interesting. In my view, having spent a good deal of time around both of them over 30 years, Bill Clinton is a visionary. He's enormously bright, and he sees, beyond the horizon in many ways. But Hillary Clinton is more analytical, and she's in many ways more of a decision maker, and in some ways may be more suited to be an executive than even her husband was. And I think President Obama said it well last night. I think even taking into account President Obama and President Clinton, Hillary Clinton is the most prepared and qualified person we've ever had an opportunity to vote for.
Thanks, Gordon. Chris, I want to go to you, and I want to give you a chance to give our good friend Ron a little bit of an assist so he doesn't feel like we're ganging up on him here.
Sure.
Talking about moderate Republicans and everything, you've spent a lot of time in your career on Capitol Hill. You've worked with some moderate Republicans. Ron himself is a very well-known and respected moderate Republican. It seems to me the thing that unites Republicans, even if there's disagreement about Mr. Trump, is a real aversion to Obama and Hillary Clinton. And I wonder if you, Chris, could talk to us a little bit about where you think moderate Republicans are going to go. What's their home going to be in the general election? Do you think they'll come into the Republican fold, or do you think it's going to be, you know, a fight for the end, or maybe even a boon for the libertarians that are running? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I believe it depends on how one defines moderate Republican. And let's, for the sake of simplicity and convenience, let's discuss two types of moderate Republican. There's the type of moderate Republican, as you aptly describe me, that comes from the defense and foreign policy world. Those of us up and down the food chain within the GOP tend to view candidates through that national security foreign policy lens, have placed a great deal of scrutiny on Mr. Trump and some of his comments, and folks considerably more important and prominent than myself, such as Brent Scowcroft, former national security advisor to George W. Bush, and Richard Armitage, former Deputy Secretary of State to George H.W. Bush, have both come out against Trump. But let's focus now on the other type of moderate, the more general moderate Republican who is not as concerned about defense and foreign policy issues or is not solely focused on those issues. I think those types of moderates will gravitate toward Mr. Trump. I don't see them gravitating toward Secretary Clinton as a continuation of a President Obama foreign policy that they have a significant amount of dissatisfaction with, if not vehement opposition to. So I think you're going to see a split within moderate Republicans. Some will write in candidates. Some will gravitate towards Secretary Clinton as the two individuals I just mentioned who said they would likely vote for her, as surprising as that may sound. But I believe there is another faction within that, within the moderate GOP ranks that will stick with Trump despite reservations, despite concerns. And on that note, consistently now we're seeing in polls that Americans have placed terrorism as their utmost concern, above economic issues even. And they still consistently indicate that they trust Donald Trump to handle terrorism issues more so than Secretary Clinton. I think it's going to be interesting to see whether that we see any fluctuation in those polls coming out of these two conventions. I know that the Clinton campaign certainly hopes so. She tends to be stronger on foreign policy. When they're packaged together, national security and foreign policy, they tend to be very close. They tend to pull pretty neck and neck. So bottom line is, I think we're going to see a split among Republicans. I think many will end up going towards Secretary Clinton for the reasons I stated earlier. They just simply view Donald Trump as too dangerous and too reckless and too uninformed. But others will stomach it and vote for him as they vote against Secretary Clinton and an additional 4 or 8 years of President Obama's foreign policy.
Thanks so much, Chris. We've got about 3 minutes left for the call, so I want to go to a lightning round here. And Ron, we'll go to you, and then Gordon, some final thoughts, and then Howard Dean, you're going to get the last word to preview tonight in the general election for us. So Ron Kaufman, in a minute or less, why don't you give us your final thoughts?
These two campaigns, as I said earlier, two conventions, accomplished everything they wanted to accomplish. Change versus risk will be the deciding factor. And I think that no matter what happens, no matter which party wins, which candidate wins in November, the America that our neighbors and our friends and our allies see won't change. We'll still continue to be a strong friend, a strong ally, and the force for peace around the world.
Thanks, Ron. Ambassador Giffen, your daughter and my daughter will be with us on the floor tonight. It's kind of a historic moment. What are your final thoughts for us? And Ambassador Giffen dropped off. I forgot about that. I'll just tell you, we're excited to invite our daughters. Governor Dean, over to you. Gordon yields his time to you, as do I.
So far this has been a terrific convention. There are a number of Sanders people that are in orbit over this are very tiny. It's what you'd expect. And it's not a problem. Their numbers exceed the Republicans' numbers substantially, which is very good. You know, I was thinking about this last night. You can't match the star power that you've had in the Democratic Party. And Obama has the best ratings of any of the people running. So the truth is, we're not going to know how this all works out in terms of the efficacy of the conventions until we see the numbers, as Ron said, in a few days of the bounce that you get. And we don't know, we haven't seen tonight. You know, we don't know what's going to happen tonight. We don't know how Hillary's going to do. I think she'll do great, but who knows? So this is all speculation. I think we're in much better shape than we were in a week ago. I think there's a certain amount of revulsion among the American people for the kind of the bigotry and the misogyny that Trump can't help himself with. His running mate doesn't help any. In fact, I think we may win Indiana as a result, because Pence's numbers were in the toilet in Indiana. So it's just, maybe you can get to the presidency being unconventional in a year where there's a lot of people left behind by globalization all over the world, and they're stirring up Western democracies all over the place. I don't think you can get to be president without people believing that it's your presidential material. And I don't think most Americans are going to believe, no matter how angry they are, that Donald Trump is presidential material.
Well, thanks, Governor. On that note, it will be a very interesting race to watch. I want to echo my dear colleague Ron Kaufman's comments at the top of the call, where he thanked everyone for joining in these last 2 weeks. Ron Kaufman has done yeoman's work and has been on more calls than any of us, and we're very grateful to you. We're very grateful to everyone who dialed in. We'd love to hear from you. Email whoever you know at Denton's or direct message us on Twitter. Pick your communication platform of choice. We'd love to hear from you. Our public policy practice is going to continue to engage with our clients, our friends, the media, and all of our experts around the world about the importance of this election and elections around the world and what they mean for policy and what they mean for the businesses that we represent. So we're really privileged to have been able to bring you this kind of analysis. We hope you've enjoyed it. Again, all of these briefings each morning are available on our site at www.dentons.com. Please stay in touch with us, and everybody enjoy the rest of the convention, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much.